This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
From March Madness all the way to NBA playoff action, and that's pretty great. And we get his call not only for that, but he was doing some Lakers T-Wolves. So we can ask him about everything happening in the NBA playoffs as well. First and foremost, Jay, good morning. What was it like, though, Saturday watching Stephen Curry take over a game like that? No Jimmy Butler, and he puts the team on his back, obviously with help of Buddy Hield and Gary Payton. But what was it like calling the game a Stephen Curry playoff game?
Well, it was great, but you know, over the years, you've become used to seeing Stephen Curry do incredible things, and it becomes that's one of the challenges, I think, of living right now. When you get to watch Stephen Curry or LeBron James, or when you watch Tiger Woods or Rory McIlroy play golf, is, you know, they do the spectacular. You have to be careful not to think that the spectacular is routine. And he was spectacular in that game, especially after a slow start. I mean, in the first quarter, I think he only scored 2 points. He's 1 for 5. And I don't remember the Warriors. At one point, I turned to Mark Jones during the game, and I said, geez, you know, Golden State's only got 22 points. It was midway through the second quarter. And they just kind of picked it up, and defensively, they were great. I thought Steve Kerr did a great job of making adjustments, not only in rotations and his starting lineup. You know, Houston had been using Alperen Şengün on Moses Moody, and it really was disruptive of any screen and roll action that they were using. And I think Steve wanted to change that dynamic, and the starting lineup really helped him do that. And throughout the course of the game, I thought the decisions that were made, especially when Gary Payton was in the second half, when they, you know, put him right around the foul line and ran Curry off him for a little handoff action, he kept it and got to his left hand and was able to score, and then used him in screen roll situations. Cause when he rolls, man, he opens up a lot of space. And, it was just, I thought game plan wise and then execution wise and having so many role players step up to help out. I don't think Steph was Batman. He was Superman in that game.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the GP2 thing, because when Jimmy's out there, Butler, that is, it feels like GP2 is relegated to a corner three-point shooter or in the dunker spot. And so, you know, having Jimmy not operate into that middle area in the paint, you know, they were utilizing GP2 at the top of the key, and all these guys are just so worried about Steph Curry getting the ball. They did that Draymond little fake handoff, and then boom, let me go right to the rim. He did it multiple times. But watching Steph Curry, and you see the younger era where these guys are all training with the ball, right? They all train with the ball. Every kid that I coach is training with the ball. I go, what makes Steph Steph is that he's as, if not more deadly without the ball. And whether it's Tari Eason, Amen Thompson, Dylan Brooks, if they fall asleep for just a second, he's backdooring. He's moving or sliding, or he continues to run. Watching him without the ball, Jay, how many other players in the history of the game have played this way?
Well, there are a bunch that have done a great job of moving without the ball. I think Steph is the most dangerous player I've ever seen, or at least that I can conjure up. When he gives it up, he finds ways to get it back in areas where he's really, really dangerous. And, you know, a lot of times when you give the ball up, the natural tendency of a defender, you know, relax is the wrong word, but you're not as intense. And he gets face guarded, top locked, all these things to keep him from getting it. But when he gets it, then gives it up, I mean, he's so good at relocating, at cutting, and cutting hard. I don't know how many miles he runs in a game. I know they measure that stuff, but nobody runs more. And that's probably the thing. You know, you combine his basketball intelligence, which is supreme, with his endurance and conditioning, which, you know, we throw a lot of rose petals at LeBron James's feet for playing at that level at age 40. But sometimes I think people tend to forget that Steph Curry's 37. And Draymond is not far off, but Draymond looks a fair amount older than Steph does with his beard. But both those guys, I thought, as good as Steph was, great as Steph was on the offensive end, he was really good defensively. I thought Draymond Green was the equal to that defensively. He was maniacal on defense. And I think I said it during the broadcast, probably showed my age, but it kind of reminded me a little bit of, you know, the look he had on his face, the plays he was making. It reminded me kind of Mike Singletary as linebacker for that 85 Bears team. I mean, he's so engaged in every play, and you take him off the floor and there's no, you take those two off the floor on each end. There's no way that Golden State operates at the same level. He's a remarkable defender. And one of the best I've ever seen.
He really is. I mean, he went up vertical multiple times on Şengün and Thompson at the rim. And those guys are just huge. And they're athletic freaks. And Şengün's touch around the rim is spectacular. Those two players are a great example. Seasoned college players with high IQ who grind the film. And, you know, it shows in how they play. As you're watching, you know, the Warriors, there's been a lot of chatter about JK and maybe how he doesn't necessarily fit the style of play. And then you see a young guy like Quinton Post, who's a 4 or 5 year player coming out of college, and you're seeing growth in real time. As you watch the game and you have such a slant to college because of all the years doing it, what is it about this system that it feels like it's a requirement to have that instinct, that IQ, and that feel, and you have to log the hours in college to kind of play in it? Why is it so nuanced?
Well, I don't think it necessarily speaks to having to log years in college. I think it just speaks to an understanding of the game where you have to play without the ball in your hands. In other words, it's not a system where you're going to get the ball and go create something for yourself. So, you know, if your decision is to catch the ball in the middle of the floor and look for your own offense instead of catch it, move it, and then go set a pin down for Steph Curry or try to get somebody open, you know, that's one of the reasons Kevon Looney is so effective over the years with Golden State. You know, he's not a scorer, but he's a hell of a screener. And I think he does as good a job as any big guy in the league of getting other people open. And then when he does that, it opens up opportunities for him and great offensive rebounder, things like that. But if you're not proficient in thinking through how you can get somebody else open and how you can space the floor, I mean, your point earlier about Gary Payton is a good one. Like when Jimmy Butler's in there, his role is different. But just because your role is a certain way with a particular combination doesn't mean you're not capable of more. And I think a number of players in game three showed that with Jimmy Butler out, you know, they were capable of doing some things they don't necessarily have to do when Butler's in there. And that's the mark of a smart player, in my view.
Talking with Jay Billis, who was on the call for Game 3 on ABC Saturday night. Obviously, does a lot of work with ESPN on the college side, but has been calling some games here in the first round of the playoffs. And another series you called, maybe we'll get to it at the very end here, was the Lakers and the Timberwolves. Obviously, winner of that series will face either the Rockets or the Warriors. T-Wolves up 3-1 there after a monster performance from Anthony Edwards. But keeping it on this one, Jay, the Rockets, obviously, and you felt it with the Lakers yesterday, they were down 2-1. You're going to get their best punch, I think, tonight. Like they cannot go down 3-1 in this series and feel like they have a shot to win it. Obviously, with all those young guys making their first ever playoff series, the confidence has got to be waning right now. So what can they do differently tonight, you think, to combat the Golden State Warriors? We don't know if Jimmy Butler's going to play. I'm probably leaning that he is, but again, you don't know. What could they do differently tonight heading into this game that they haven't done these first three games?
Well, number one, they can make their free throws. If they make free throws, they may have won game three. And I mean, I can't remember the exact number that they missed game long, but at one point they were like 12 of 22. And you can't miss that many free. And it wasn't just the hack of Steven Adams thing, because Adams made free throws at a higher level than he normally does. I think he might have been 4 of 6 or something like that. But it was the other guys, you know, missing free throws, guys making one of two and all that stuff. But the cumulative effect of missing that many free throws, you can't give those points away. So making free throws is one. But the other part of it is they've got to find more ways to get easier baskets. They didn't capitalize on offensive rebound opportunities, which Golden State did. Like, if Golden State grabs an offensive rebound, it's going to be a three. And I only remember Dylan Brooks hitting that one after they grabbed two offensive yes. rebounds in one possession. But there might have been more than that that I just can't recall. But they I don't think they took advantage of the offensive rebounds they grabbed. That's true of game one, frankly, too. They grabbed 22 of them in game one, and I don't think they capitalized on enough of them. And then the other part of it, I think, is Jalen Green. Like, he's an outstanding young player, but he's still a young player. And I just don't think you can win at that level and expect to beat Golden State when, you know, he goes 7 points, 38 points, then 9 points. And you give Golden State credit. They got into him and took space away in games one and three. They didn't do it in game two. They allowed him to get space off high screen and roll things where he could get downhill and maneuver. And they took his maneuverability away, I thought, in game three really effectively. And, you know, because if he had another, you know, 20 plus point game, it's a lot harder to beat Houston. But, you know, they'll be at home. It'll be a different, you know, or, excuse me, they have to win. They have to win game four, in my view. I think your point is right. I mean, hell, 74% of the teams that win game three when it's tied 1-1 go on to win the series. So game four is going to be a must.
Another guy I want to bring up, Jay, who we've been talking about all morning, who I thought rose the occasion, obviously not offensively, but defensively and definitely on the glass, was Quentin Post. I mean, this rookie, given where this team was at come January, and he gets inserted in here and he plays, and, you know, he's just, you didn't know where this team was. And all of a sudden you get the Jimmy Butler trade, and he's been a huge factor as a rookie on this team, a 7-footer with size. But it's what he was doing shooting the ball for the most part. We didn't really talk much about his defense. And I thought on the glass, when you got the likes of Steven Adams out there, Alperen Şengün, obviously an all-star, and he was the one that led all players in total rebounds, 12. What did you make of Quentin Post, the player, coming out of Boston College? And are you surprised at all as a rookie, him being able to have these type of performances in the playoffs?
Yeah, maybe a little surprised. I mean, Quentin, yeah, you guys know, he was born in Amsterdam, and he actually played with Jesse Edwards there when he was growing up, who's in the NBA now, played at Syracuse and all that. You know, Quentin started out at Mississippi State. Now, how you go from Amsterdam to Starkville, Mississippi, I don't know. But when he transferred to Boston College, he was one of the better players in the ACC. It's just his team didn't win at the level where he got recognized for it by the masses. But I thought, you know, going into that game, getting the start, you know, he's made more threes than twos on the season. He's better from three than two. He's not a great finisher inside of 10 feet. And I think that showed up a little bit in game three. But you're right. Scoring wasn't his contribution. It was more his defense, where he helped protect the lane. You guys know, like, Golden State's not a rim protecting team. They're not a shot blocking team, but they protect the lane really well. They're a very good paint protecting team, and Post really contributed well to that. But his rebounding was a difference making factor in the game, and he rebounded really at both ends. But he accepted the physical challenge, which is considerable, and he played 20-plus minutes. He must play 24, 25 minutes. So to do that, I was really impressed and rebounded at a really high level.
Jay, you've kind of alluded to it a few times on this call. Steve Kerr is just brilliant. And you made a couple of great points in this game. There was one when they did the hack Adams. He misses the second free throw after hitting the first one. They get a rebound, they score a bucket. You go, well, I mean, the whole point of fouling him is to not walk away with 3 points in a possession. So I would probably ditch that. And then he calls a timeout. You were referencing it earlier, 34-22. Calls a timeout, and you say, somebody besides Curry has got to do something in this game, and they got to figure this out. And then later on in that quarter, they're down 49-37, and there's 2:24 to go. And it feels like the Rockets are in full control, and Buddy starts making plays, and the Warriors go on a great little close of the half, and they're down 49-46. And I just felt like they sealed all the momentum And then Steve Kerr, to his credit, as they're changing and they're going back and forth, he's riding certain combinations. He rolls with the GP2 lineup to kind of close the game, and GP2 rewards them. And I thought they made some subtle adjustments. As you watch from your vantage point, why is it in the NBA we don't give a legendary coach like Steve Kerr more credit? I know the players are spectacular. I get it. Steph Curry's an all-timer. But it just feels like Steve Kerr, at least with this fan base here, never gets his just due for the subtle adjustments and the riding of the hot hands on the ancillary pieces that he's got out there. Why is that?
Well, it's probably because we tend to gravitate toward what the stars did in the NBA, and it's a star-driven league, so that dominates so much of the conversation. I mean, I think what's kind of interesting, and part of it's the way the NBA does their stats, but you know, I know that the Warriors sometimes take a little heat from the fan base about, well, they need to run more pick and rolls. Well, they run a ton of pick and rolls, but a lot of them aren't statistically locked because they don't lead the pick and roll itself. That action doesn't lead to the shot, the missed shot or the turnover, whatever it may be. But they use a lot of pick and rolls to as initiating action to get the secondary action. And I think earlier in the year, and maybe that's one of the things that made Golden State a little more comfortable in the Jimmy Butler injury situation, but they were messing with combinations and lineups all the time at the start of the year. Like, remember how many players Steve was playing at the start of the year? I mean, I did their game against Boston that they won. I mean, they played everybody on the roster. I think they put the trainer in for 4 minutes. They were playing everybody. It might have been going 12, 13 deep. And they couldn't do that the whole season. And then the team changed after the Jimmy Butler trade. But he spends a lot of time with the staff thinking about combinations and, you know, like the, I think what, like we mentioned before, they wanted to change the dynamic of Şengün getting away with guarding Moses Moody. So they wanted to put a lineup out there that made him guard a five man. And they could put him in screen roll situations. They could get him out of being the low man and disrupting things. And I thought it was brilliant, you know, but Steve's a really smart basketball person. He's been around the game forever, but you guys know how it is. It's kind of like, he has a connection playing for Phil Jackson, but when Phil Jackson was coaching the Bulls and the Lakers, you know, he probably didn't get as much credit because, well, of course he's got Jordan and Pippen, or he's got Shaq and Kobe. I don't remember people saying that about Red Auerbach having the lineups he did with Bill Russell and the Lion, you know, John Havlicek and all that. No coach is going to win without great players. There are some coaches that lose with them, but there aren't very many that have ever won. I think it would be zero that have won big without great players. And sometimes, you know, the coaching gets overlooked in that.
Hey, Jay, we really appreciate the time, man. Great stuff. Continued success on the calls. No, we've loved it because I love you so much in the college game. Yeah. I think I speak for everyone here. It's been really a breath of fresh air to hear your analysis on the NBA side.
Totally
now, truly,
agree.
Whether it's the Lakers and T-Wolves or this Warriors-Rockets series, real quick on that. Obviously, T-Wolves are up 3-1. The series isn't over. Warriors could go up 3-1 there. How would you handicap that series if it were to be the Warriors-T-Wolves next round?
I think Minnesota presents a ton of different challenges for any team. They are long and athletic, and they're really deep, and they bring off starter quality minutes from the bench. And one of the most underrated players in the league is Naz Reid. And he's shown that in the Lakers series, really shown it all year long. He was sixth man of the year last year, arguably could have been it again. He had a better year statistically this year. But Dante DiVincenzo and Julius Randle, they're finally used to the, I think Minnesota's finally used to the trade. It took a while to kind of figure everything out for the whole group. And they were a loss away from the play-in. But there's no separation between the number two team in the West and the number eight team. Or it was 10, I guess, with whoever got in. Well, I don't even remember the play-in now. With Memphis. And the Kings, yeah. So it really didn't matter. They were all so close, but they can really, really shoot it and really spread the floor. And they can put a big lineup. They can go small. So they can cause anybody a lot of problems. But when you've got Steph Curry and Draymond Green right now with Jimmy Butler, if they're healthy, there's nobody out there that that Golden State cannot beat. I just still think Oklahoma City is so strong and so talented across the board that it's going to take an amazing effort to beat them deep into the playoffs.
Jay, good stuff. Appreciate it, man. You have a good morning, and appreciate you stopping by.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
There he goes. That's Jay Billis, who was on the call for Game 3 on ABC Saturday night, and obviously he's been doing a lot of work there on the college side, but he's been, and I mean it, he's been so damn refreshing listening to on here.